Episode 18, podcast number 18 of the Insane Ramblings of Crazy Old Men, where Mike and Ray talk about Major Tom, Captain Tom Moore, the evil of banks and the mega rich, learning Klingon, and Steve Headley. Good morning, Mike. How are you? What a great morning on the 19th of April 2020, still in lockdown. Just before we start, I've got to tell you that our listener in Toowoomba, Australia, is still listening. I don't know who you are, but hello.
Good day.
Good day.
Good day. Fancy a tinny?
I ordered a sponge and a chamois leather on Amazon Prime. I know it sounds a bit pathetic, but I didn't have one and I wanted to do the job properly. So now I've got my sponge and my chamois leather. I went out the other day and I lathered up the car and I washed it down and it looks absolutely pristine. So I'm living in a pristine house with a pristine car and I can't go anywhere.
And have you got a pristine dog?
Well, funny enough, Tracy washed him the other day. She insists on washing him, and this is a good tip for our listeners. She washes him with tomato sauce.
Don't let the Chinese find out. They'll come home and eat him. Have you heard of a company called Duolingo?
I've heard of a singer called Dua Lipa.
It's a company that helps you to learn languages. And they've noticed a massive increase over the last year. Their number of language students went up by 24% with the resolution of the Brexit decision by Boris. But now with the lockdown, it's gone up even more. What's interesting is they published a list of the languages that people want to learn. Spanish is the most popular. 26 million people worldwide have registered to learn Spanish. French is 15 million, but then you come to some interesting ones. So Latin, 1 million people want to learn Latin, but get this, Ray, something for you. Have a guess at the number of people that have registered to learn High Valyrian.
You mean as in Game of Thrones?
Yeah, as in Game of Thrones.
200,000, something stupid like that.
It's in excess of 770,000 people. 300,000 people have registered to learn Klingon.
Excellent. Well, all useful stuff.
All I can say to that is,
biggest hero at the moment is Major, or more accurately, Captain Tom Moore. This guy is, what, he's 2 weeks away, probably less now, from his 100th birthday. A bit like you, really.
Yeah,
his sort of age. And unlike you, he's heading up and down his garden on this Zimmer frame. He's up in West Yorkshire and wanted to raise £1,000.
He had a hip replacement not long ago.
Ah, well, that explains it. He started off wanting to raise £1,000 by walking up and down his garden with his Zimmer frame. As time went on, almost a million people have made donations. The last time I looked, it was about 20 million. Is that the case?
That's what I heard on the radio this morning. All for the NHS.
Yeah, he's amazing. Apparently, he was a captain in the Second World War in India and Burma. So he's used to this stuff. He must be one hard cookie.
Yeah, I guess he is. The BBC have got Stars Charity Night, I think, coming up next weekend. And I tell you what, I bet your bottom dollar they don't raise 20 million. I think he is a real hero.
Richard Branson's looking for $500 million worth of injection into Virgin Airways. He's furloughed his staff, he's laid some staff off. He's obviously claiming benefits from the government and he wants more money from the government to dig him out of this hole. I don't think we ought to help out these people like Richard Branson. I mean, we ought to help out people who work for the National Health Service or dustmen or people like that. What's going to happen after this virus? Is their wages going to go up? Are all the caps we've had on public sector wages going to lift all of a sudden? I hope so. I'd like to see higher taxation on the mega rich, the Bransons of this world. And for people like, as I said, the dustmen, the National Health Service workers, the cleaners we've got, all the people who are keeping this country going at the moment, whose wages have been suppressed for so long, I'd like to see them getting their reward out of this at the end of the day.
I agree. There's this guy called, I don't know if you know him by name, it's a guy called Steve Headley, and he gets paid £100,000 a year. That's not why I want him as a villain, but he's a senior general assistant of the RMT union, and he made a comment on Facebook when Boris was ill, saying that if Boris died, he would throw a party to celebrate. His union have suspended him. They haven't sacked him, but they suspended him pending an investigation, and the guy is refusing to apologise. I mean, what's wrong with some of these people, Ray?
You're right, and apart from which, how can he have a party when you have to self-isolate?
Steve, someone that I know is close to your heart, as you've had some interesting dealings with them, is the banks, the major banks.
Right.
To set the scene, if you cast your mind back to 2008, when we had the economic catastrophe, in Britain, we bailed out the banks to the tune of £60 billion. So that's about £1,000 for every person in the UK that we gave to the banks. In America, it's even worse. The American government helped them out to the tune of, get this, $205 trillion.
What?
Of which $104 trillion has been paid back.
My God.
But, you know, our banks, they're shocking. And more recently, they were instructed by the government to help small businesses. And the government have given our banks, these poor people, £330 billion for corporate Britain. So they've guaranteed 80% of loans to small businesses. Now, so far, there's been 300,000 inquiries. Have a guess how many have actually been approved.
I think I've heard this. Isn't it something like 5%, 10%, something like that?
It's less than that. It's 5,000 out of 300,000.
My God.
And what they're doing is applying the old regulations. They're claiming they haven't got the staff to deal with it. But they're also applying the old regulations and making these small businesses put up personal guarantees for loans. It's absolutely criminal. When you look at how well off these banks are, so the NatWest RBS Group, because they're changing their name to RBS from NatWest. Now, in 2019, their profits before tax were $4.2 billion, and they received, in the bailout, they received £45 billion. And if you remember, we still own 62%. 62% of the bank is owned by the taxpayer, and these people are quibbling about, you know, paying people back. Barclays, another big one, profits before tax, $6.2 billion, and they gave their CEO a pay rise of 76% last year, so that he now got a total of £5.9 million. I think it's shocking. How do you feel about all this?
Well, I know it's hard to get anything done with the banks even before the coronavirus. I was trying to get Tracy's name put on a signing mandate. It took me, and I'm with NatWest Bank, it took me 4 months all in all. You know, they don't know their arse and their elbow at the best of time. And now they're being asked by the government to do something worthwhile. They're singularly failing. I really hope that there's an investigation after this that leads to a total revamp of how the banking system works.
Yeah. I mean, if you think of it, from that economic depression, which was their fault, not a single senior person has been convicted. Not a single senior person. I think they convicted a couple of minor managers. But the reason why I feel aggrieved, there was an interesting article about a guy called John Bridle who ran a fish and chip shop in Sussex. And he was doing so well, and he planned to open a second one. And he banked with NatWest. In 2004, within NatWest, they made a mistake and declared him dead. So they froze all his accounts, and he couldn't pay his bills. He was reassured when he contacted them it would be sorted. And in September 2005, so over a year later, he actually saw his bank manager face to face, and the bank manager told him it would get it sorted. They didn't. In 2007, NatWest closed his business account but gave him a loan against his house. He lost both businesses, and in 2011 he tried to commit suicide. He made a complaint to the ombudsman, but they can't help because the amount is too much, and said he'd have to take civil action, which obviously he can't afford. I mean, this is scary, isn't it? If a bank can declare you dead and freeze your money, and he's not the only one. A guy called Anthony Ratcliffe, I mean, this would be funny if it wasn't so serious, who is a hotelier up in Yorkshire, and he was recovering from cancer of the bowel, and Barclays killed him off, declared him dead. They reinstated him. The latest count is he's been killed off by Barclays three times and had his accounts frozen each time. I mean, I'm with you. I think the whole banking system, they need to be held to account. People need to actually go to prison. Those, although Steve Headley, I despise him, I think the big banks are my villain of the day.
Haven't you been declared dead a few times?
No, I appear dead several times.
So, Mike, have you got any ideas of why some people should be so affected by this coronavirus and die in many cases, and some people aren't affected at all?
It's a really complex question, and I know at that big hospital they were erected in London, they're actually investigating this amongst the people that have been admitted. One idea is that it depends on comorbidity. So, for instance, people that are obese apparently are 50% more likely to die than non-obese people. That may be due to other conditions they've got, such as diabetes, heart problems. People of BAME people, black and ethnic minorities, again, because they're probably more prone to coronary disease and diabetes, they seem to have a less favourable outcome. But I think one of the things in America they questioned is whether it's due to their sociological background. So, for instance, in the States, about a third of the people in the hospitals are from BAME people, whereas in the population, it's only 14% of the population. And they think part of it is social deprivation. You know, people not learning so much, not being so fit and healthy because they can't eat well. How does that sound to you?
That sounds eminently sensible. I wondered if there might have been some sort of genetic component to it. I mean, it's interesting if you look at how alcohol affects people. So, for example, if you look at the Europeans when they came into North America and they gave alcohol to the indigenous population, they couldn't cope with it. It's like some people in the Far East, they can't cope with alcohol particularly well. And it's because they haven't got something called alcohol dehydrogenase, or they haven't got as much of it. The bottom line is that it seems that the Europeans have built up a tolerance because that's the way we purified water. We created alcohol and we drank alcohol because it was safer than the water, whereas in the Far East, they tended to boil water instead. So what you've got is you've got people who have got more of a genetic tolerance to alcohol and some people who haven't. Now you can imagine a scenario where you put all these people together, you don't know who they are, and then you give them all alcohol, and some people can't cope with it and some people can. You might be wondering why that is the case. It could be the fact that perhaps people who are tolerant to this virus have experienced genetically, historically, ancestrally, this virus or something like this virus before? I mean, I know we often speak about the Black Death, and the Black Death's supposed to be a bacterium, but no one really knows. It could well be an Ebola-like virus. There could be something back there that may account for this difference.
A company called Gilead have got a product called Remdesivir, which is an antiviral. It's a nucleotide analogue that binds onto the RNA of the virus and stops it replicating. And they've leaked some results of this large phase 3 clinical study that's going on worldwide in 2,500 patients. And apparently we've had more than 100 severely ill patients treated in NHS hospitals. And what the woman said is, speaking about the bit in Chicago, which is, it's only 125 patients, but 113 were severely ill. And they gave this thing by infusion or injection. And to quote one of the chief investigators, "We've seen people coming off ventilators a day after starting therapy. Most didn't need the full treatment course of 10 days, and only 2 out of the 125 died." I mean, isn't that fantastic?
Yeah, it's amazing. I think there's been quite a lot of animal studies done on it as well. And they looked at Ebola virus in rhesus monkeys, and it seemed to prevent development of the Ebola. So, yeah, very promising drug. Having said that, and having spoken about animal testing, I'd just like to quickly go on to something that makes me really annoyed. I'm obviously taking Buster for more walks at the moment. And as I go walking in the little field at the bottom of my road, I notice everywhere there's these plastic bags full of dog poo, poo bags. And people, you would think, if they went to the effort of playing the groom of the stool to their animal and sweeping their excrement into a plastic bag, they have the good manners to bring that plastic bag either home with them or stick it in a bin. But they don't. They leave it on the floor. Or, worse still, which is really bad, they hang it on a bush. I've seen poo bags of all different colours hanging on these bushes. And I think to myself, what do these people expect to happen? I mean, do they expect a man to come from somewhere and pick up all the little plastic bags and bring them to a poo recycling centre? If they left the dog poo on its own, it would break down after a couple of days. In 4 days, it'd be gone totally. If you leave a plastic bag full of dog poo around, it probably took a million years for the plastic bag to degrade.
So that's what it is. I've seen those. We can get them around here as well. Those little bags hanging on the trees. I thought they were special poo bag trees. I thought it was like the summer fruit of the poo bag tree.
As usual, if you've been affected by our podcast in any way, shape or form, we are not responsible. It is not our fault for anything that we said. If you'd like to get in contact with us directly, please try iracompodcast@gmail.com, or you can get all things on our Facebook page. And I must say that Major Tom, the wonderful Captain Tom Moore, has at today's date walked the length of his garden and raised £20 million for the NHS. That is absolutely staggering. Well done, Captain Tom.